Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We welcome in Adam Vingan into the program. Adam, appreciate you for joining us. I'm sure that you are probably sick of hearing my voice by now, but appreciate you for filling in with Jared for Jared with me yesterday. I know we kind of touched on this yesterday, but Adam, just what were some of your biggest takeaways from Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette's press conference yesterday?
Yeah, there was a lot of ground covered, and I admired in a way how upfront Andrew Brunette was when talking about specifically Philip Tomasino and Cody Glass, because especially with young players in this day and age, young people are a lot more sensitive. I can speak to that from firsthand experience. I'm a pretty sensitive guy myself. Yeah, so especially with young athletes, you have to treat them with kid gloves more often than not. I'm sure Derek can speak to that too. It's a much different time. I'm sure the experience Derek had as a young athlete wouldn't fly today in terms of how coaches and others talk to athletes and try to motivate athletes. And I thought that, you know, Andrew Brunette had some, I wouldn't call them harsh words, but they were pointed comments about where both of those players stand in their development and the things that they need to do to be a part of this organization long term. And, you know, as often is the case, Brunette had already said those things to Cody Glass and Philip Tomasino, so it wasn't as if though they were tuning in to hear what they were saying and heard Brunette say that and say, "Oh my God, how could you say that about me?" Like, they had already heard this. But the most pressing thing, the most newsworthy thing, was Barry Trotz's comments on UC Saros and talking about wanting to get a contract done. And as I joked with Caroline at the end of yesterday's show, two summers ago, we were on pins and needles about Philip Forsberg's contract. That took up a lot of our summer conversation. Last year, it was DeAndre Hopkins taking up a lot of our summer conversation. And this summer, it's going to be UC Saros and what happens there. So, you know, Barry Trotz definitely gave us a lot of information there to run with over the next number of months. As he said, that he doesn't expect this to be a July 1st announcement that UC Saros has a new contract. So this could drag out a while, and I know that we'll have plenty to discuss between now and then whenever something happens with UC Saros.
It's a nice tall drink of water to get us through the Sahara Desert. Adam Vingan is with us. I'm glad that you bring up the goaltending, because that's one of my biggest questions. I think all of our biggest questions heading into the offseason. If Adam Vingan was the general manager of the Nashville Predators, how would Adam Vingan proceed with the goaltending position?
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday, and I am of the mind, as I think many people are with the exception of Willie, that it is time to move on from UC Saros, and that is not a reflection of UC Saros' ability. I mean, I think his play speaks for itself. He's one of the top goaltenders in the NHL. But I wonder about whether it's the right allocation of cap dollars to sign him to a long-term contract. And when Caroline and I were talking about this yesterday, Joe chimed in sent me a text on my personal line, not driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, though it is available for sponsorship if someone is looking to sponsor my personal text line and pay for my phone bill. And he brought up a good point about just the timeline of when Saros arrived in the NHL versus when Askarov could potentially arrive in the NHL. So I did this quickly before I came on. So Saros' first season as a full-time NHL player was the 2016-17 season. At that time, Rene was 34 years old, and Saros was 21. And Rene was in year five of a seven-year contract. So Rene was entering the twilight of his career. He still had a few years left. He did sign one more contract, a two-year contract. But he was closer to the end of his career than the beginning at the time that Saros entered the NHL. Let's assume that UC Saros signs a long-term contract with the Predators that will start in the 25-26 season. If my math is right, Staros will be 30 at the start of that season, and Yaroslav Askarov will be 23. So they'll be closer in age, and Staros will be in the prime of his career versus Rene, who is near the end of his career at the time that Staros arrived. And Staros will be in year one of a presumably a 7 or 8 year contract. To me, it just doesn't make sense to have both of them on the roster at that time. So I think that it makes more sense to move on from him. Now, I also said this to Caroline yesterday. I am not opposed to UC Saros starting next season with the Predators on an expiring contract. I don't think you need to have something in place with him before the start of next season. If you want to have the mentorship, if Askarov comes to the NHL as a backup and you want to have Saros mentor Askarov the way that Rene mentored Saros, you could have that next season without a new contract in place with Saros, and potentially you move Saros at the deadline, or you continue to negotiate. If I recall correctly, Philip Forsberg went through the entire final year of his contract before signing a new deal with the Predators. So it's not like there's recent history to suggest that it could happen. So I'm not opposed to UC Saros playing on an expiring deal, but I just don't see the long-term fit for both of them to be on the roster in the not-too-distant future. A texter brought up the Kirk Cousins-Michael Penix situation, and I see that as a similar situation to what the Predators would be doing if they re-signed UC Saros and kept Askarov as well. I think you only have room for one of them long-term.
Well, Michael Penix is already, what, 25? Almost 25? So he's 3 or 4 years older than Askarov. So let's keep that in mind. The one thing that I would take issue with that you and Joe, because I was on with Joe and Robbie yesterday, we've all kind of traded different slots on our station, debating our opinions on this back and forth, is that when you say that Rene was in the twilight of his career, he was in the last 3 years of that 7-year, $7 million contract, as you pointed out. But during those 3 years, remember, Rene was a late bloomer. At age 34, he took his team to the Stanley Cup final. That's not the twilight of his career. The following year, at age 35, he won the Vezina Trophy on the President's Cup winning. So that's not the twilight. And then the following year, he finished seventh in the Vezina, and the team won the division. So he wasn't your ordinary 34, 35, 36-year-old goalie. So you would admit that, right? So I was surprised to see the age number, but I did not think he was kind of on his way out. In fact, I think they signed him to that next contract, not to back up UC Saros, but to still kind of compete. And that's where there was that transition in 2019-20 and 2020-21, Rene's last 2 years. That's where Saros sort of had to win the job over him. So I don't think they're exact parallels in my mind, but I do think Saros benefited in those 3 years from ages 21 to 23, which is basically where Askarov is in his career, learning from Rene. I think he really benefited there, and I think I can see that path too for Askarov, learning a lot as the backup under Saros.
I think that's fair. I think maybe if I wanted to edit my comments, when I mean twilight, I meant that he was closer to the end of his career than the beginning at that time. Like, yes, you're correct. He was still a highly effective goalie, as you laid out. That is correct. He wasn't a shell of himself at age 34, but he was closer to the end than the beginning. Then Saros will be if he resigns with Askarov as the backup. That was my larger point.
Right. So let's say that magically they listen to me and it's a 3-year apprenticeship, right? So what would happen there is Saros in theory would be in the middle of a long term deal of some notion. After 3 years, he would be age 32, about to be 33. And Askarov would be in his mid-20s in theory. This is what you fear, right? This is your worst case, Adam, where Saros has still got a lot left on a contract. He's still hopefully in his prime. And Askarov is frothing and chomping at the bit, ready to be a starter. To me, that's a good problem because one of them would still be an attractive trade piece at that point. Would you not say? And maybe, I mean, and arguably more attractive than they are right now as a trade piece.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps, you know, the one thing, you know, I used this parallel yesterday because we started the show, Caroline and I, talking about Treylon Burks and, you know, the addition of Tyler Boyd and what that means for the future of Treylon Burks. And my argument was that when it comes to Yaroslav Askarov, there is something to be said about the, like, the mystery box, so to speak.
Yes.
He's young. And he had a really solid season in the American League. And sometimes that unknown, like, what could this guy be? He's just scratching the surface of his potential. We'd really like to take a shot at getting him and seeing if we can develop him into a bona fide number one goaltender. Like, that unknown can sometimes be extra enticing to a general manager versus, let's just say, he comes up, he's playing in the NHL for a couple years, even as a backup role, but, you know, has a big enough sample of starts, and he doesn't do well. Like, perhaps that value isn't as enticing. The reason why I use Treylon Burks as an example is he's 2 years into his career. You know, it hasn't been a great start. I know there are injuries that are playing a part of it, but perhaps the general manager of another NFL team might not be as inclined to give up a premium asset for Treylon Burks because they have sample, they have tape of what he's been able to do, and it hasn't been as impressive as you would hope. So that's part of the reason why I think if you sign UC Saros, you know, maybe you're better off trading Askarov before he gets to the NHL, because there's still that tantalizing aspect of his skill. So, hey, if another team trades for him and he comes to the NHL and he's not living up to the number one pick, you know, the first round pick pedigree, well, it's not your problem anymore. And that's so I wonder if it's better, if you're going to sign Saros, to move up from Askarov sooner rather than later to take advantage of that unknown and try to entice another general manager with the, hey, he could be pretty good. You never know. And that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. The way that they talked about Lankanen yesterday tells me that they're still maybe entertaining that part of it, right? Of, hey, you know, let's trade the mystery box and see if we can get a big mystery box in return kind of thing.
Right.
So let's ask this, Adam, and this is something I'm sure you'll work on, is trying to find the parameters of the right term and money for Saros, because that's the tricky part. I'm looking at the highest paid goaltenders in the NHL. Carey Price, bad deal, 10.5 per year. I don't think anybody's going there anytime soon. Bobrovsky, $10 million a year. Another bad deal. Too much for what he's given them, even though he's very capable, as Price was, of leading a team all the way towards the top of the mountain. Both Price and Bobrovsky had, under those contracts, trips all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Vasilevsky, $9.5 million. Hellebuck, $8.5 million. And here's the interesting one. Ilya Sorokin, $8.25 million. And then it skips down to John Gibson, $6.4 million. To me, between Sorokin and Gibson, 8.25 and 6.4. To me, that is the zone that you're shooting for. To me, Saros fits in there somewhere. But again, as D. Mason's pointed out, how many years are we talking here? So what is your preliminary thought on how they will try to attack that?
You know, that's a good question, because I'm looking at that same list now too. And, you know, I feel like Saros is more, you know, I think he's closer to Sorokin than he is to Gibson. Just because, you know, Gibson has been in the league for a long time and he does play for a bad team, but there was a period of time where Gibson was considered one of the top goalies in the NHL. But I just feel like comparatively, just based on, I'm looking to see when Gibson signed his current contract. He signed an 8-year deal in the summer of 2018. So we're a little bit far removed from that. I think Hellebuck signed right before the start of last season. And Sorokin's deal, which he signed last July 1st, that kicks in next year, is 8.25. So, I mean, I think Saros is closer to the 8.25, 8.5. I wonder, you know, to me, I feel like the lowest you can probably go with Saros on an annual average value is 7.5. I think that's where it starts, because He's got, you know, he's been a Vezina Trophy finalist. He's come up short a couple times in terms of being a finalist. I believe he was fourth last year, so he was the first non-finalist.
Yeah, I think arguably his resume is pretty similar to Sorokin, right? Not a ton of playoff success, fairly similar in age, a little bit more workload, but has raised his team's level over the last 3 or 4 years to get to that point. Fair?
Yes, because, I mean, if you could ask yourself the same question for the New York Islanders that you could for the Nashville Predators, where would the New York Islanders be without Ilya Sorokin? Would they have made the playoffs anywhere near as much as they've had in recent years? No. And that, and even this year, I mean, he did struggle. I mean, Semyon
kind of lost his job. He only started one playoff game
down the stretch, and in the playoffs, I mean, he started one game, I think, in that first round series, but. For the most part, Sorokin has been one of the top goalies in the NHL over the past couple of years in that same conversation with UC Saros. So to me, I mean, I think you're probably approaching eight, if not a slightly above eight. I think the lowest you can go without insulting him is 7.5.
I think you're in the ballpark. Now, here's what I'm saying if I'm Barry Trotz. First of all, I'm saying Lou Lamoriello, my good buddy who I work for with the Islanders, he knows Sorokin, right? Trotz had Sorokin as his goalie for a while.
Yes.
I would say Lou went a little high with Sorokin. I love you, Juice, but Sorokin's a little bit overpaid. And I love Sorokin. Good for him. Also, you've got the card of $7-something million in Nashville is way more keep your money than 8.25 in New York.
Mm-hmm.
That
is true. That's something that the Predators always have in their back pocket is the no state income tax. But what I keep coming back to is I just feel that money that you would be paying UC Saros, if you're not paying him and you're paying Askarov, a much lower salary because he's coming off of an entry level contract, you know, that money can go towards finding that scorer that you desperately need. And I think that for better or worse, goaltending has started. I feel like it's been devalued in the NHL. You know, Jared made the comparison the other day that goaltender has become the running back of the NHL. You know, running backs are not paid what they used to be because they're not as vital to team success as they once were. And it's easy, and I'm guilty of this too, looking at the past Stanley Cup champions and looking who their starting goaltender was. I mean, remember how we felt about Matt Murray in 2017 when the Predators played the Penguins in the playoffs. And Murray, you know, he was great in those runs for the Penguins when they went back to back. Then he fell off the face of the earth. He had some injury concerns, but he went to Ottawa. He was bad there. He went to Toronto when he wasn't injured. He was bad there. I mean, it changes very quickly. We just saw what happened to Connor Hellebuck in the first round of the playoffs. You know, that isn't to say that Hellebuck's career is now going to fall off the face of the earth, but it was the harsh reality of goaltending in the NHL. And I just think that the Predators have an heir apparent in Askarov, like they had in Saros when Rene was getting older. The Predators' track record of drafting and developing goaltenders is excellent compared to other, and compared to specifically the forward position. It's also good on defense, but it's great at goaltender. I just think that money for Saros would be better used on bringing in a premium goal scorer. And I think that's why I feel like they're better off not giving Saros that deal and spending that money another way.
Last one for you, Adam, quickly. And to the point about UC Saros' offer, you know, seen so many people say, well, just offer him two years, $6 million. He's not going to do that. Why would he do that? But last one for you, Adam. You know, Barry Trotz talked yesterday about getting faster, getting younger in the top nine, you know, getting better from the top all the way to the bottom. Do you think that there is a formula to winning a Stanley Cup without that elite premier high-end forward?
It's a good question, and that's another thing you'd have to go back and look through, right? Let's look back through recent Stanley Cup champions and who we would consider elite forwards. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights have at least three, right? Jack Eichel, Mark Stone, and I would put Jonathan Marchessault in that category. I mean, you can make an argument that Marchessault is on the cusp, but the guy did win the Conn Smythe Trophy and is a consistent 30 to 40 goal scorer. mean, we know the forwards that Colorado has. We know the forwards that Tampa Bay has. You know, and when Barry Trotz won the Stanley Cup in Washington, he did talk the other day about, you know, the Brett Connollys and the Lars Ellers and the Devontae Smith-Pellys that helped them win the Stanley Cup. But he also had Evgeny Kuznetsov playing at an elite level at the time, and Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom. I mean, St. Louis, Vladimir Tarasenko was playing that way at that time. It's hard to win the championship without at least one of those guys. And, you know, I don't think the Predators have that. I feel like Forsberg is maybe in that same conversation as Marchessault. It's like, if you want to make the argument that Philip Forsberg is an elite forward, I have time to hear it. But part of me thinks that he's right below that cut line. Like, I think that the Predators need a guy who is a bona fide elite forward, and it is hard to find. I mean, I look at what the Dallas Stars have done. I mean, I know they blew a 3-0 lead last night and lost in overtime to Colorado, but gosh, I mean, an embarrassment of riches at forward, young forwards. They've already had Jason Robertson. Wyatt Johnston is going to be a stud. Logan Stankoven looks like he's going to be a really good player. I mean, the Predators need, I mean, those younger forwards who are going to be a part of this team for a long time, who can raise their game and lead that team. I mean, the best quote of the postseason was when when Wyatt Johnston scored an overtime winner for the Stars in, I believe it was in game 3 in Vegas. And Pete DeBoer said, he's such an unbelievable player, he's not old enough to get into the casino.
Like to play the card game. Like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like that's like the Predators need a guy who can score a goal who's not old enough to drink yet. Like that's what they need.
That would be nice.
It's very hard to find.
Adam Vingan, Adam, appreciate your time and always thank you for your insight. We'll catch up soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Adam.